A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Good day, this is Ken. With me are Jeff and Adam from Obstructive View. How are you gentlemen doing?
Just inspired by the complete lack of ability to sweep even the worst teams in baseball.
I'm just okay.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, I think we can definitely talk about that. Baseball's hard. I know from firsthand experience now, because I quasi-joined a wood bat league, and I did make contact a couple of times, fouled a few pitches, but it's just hard to track pitches, you know, especially when you haven't batted in a while. And then they put me in right field, and it was the field where if you draw a direct line from my position anywhere in right field to the plate, the sun is like right there. So it was like impossible to track the ball for me. So it was a pretty rough day, but.
That means you're in a league that's good enough that people can deliberately hit the ball to right field.
Yes. Yes. I think they were trying to do that at some point, and I did make a couple of plays, but it was kind of bad at first because I was just like, dang it, I can't see the ball. Oh, there it is. It's over my head. I guess I'll run and get it. But, you know.
Yeah, or if I'm in that league, that's the only place where I would hit it because I can't catch up to the fastball.
Yeah. that ability was the biggest difference between the two levels of beer league softball that I played.
Yeah, it's a lot harder than it looks. So, you know, I think they're trying, obviously, because they are lasting out there a lot better than I would have. But, yeah, the results just aren't there. And, we are running out of time. I believe there are only 31 games remaining and lots of wasted opportunities. Just don't know what's going on with the offense. Don't know what's going on with, you know, certain relievers sometimes. But thinking about when do you switch tracks from just holding on to that last bastion of hope before you say, you know what, we should wait till next year. And there are some other things that we could talk about, but how's that for a plan, guys?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
That's good.
Let's do it.
So just to be clear, you're talking about the Cubs and not your wood bat league anymore.
Oh, no, they've been eliminated from the playoffs. The Cubs actually have not been, miraculously. I think we can actually talk about that real quick. So the Fangraphs site did update the odds. Right now, the odds of the Cubs making the playoffs are 2.4% in any capacity. I'm pretty sure the Brewers are flat out going to win the division. They're like 10 games up on the Cardinals, 10 and a half up on the Cubs. Just really terrible wasted opportunities because today, of all days, like the Reds lost, which we don't care about. We just need a little cushioning between the Cubs and fourth place. But the more important things, the Braves lost. The Mets lost. I think the Giants lost. Did they lose? I can't. Yes, Giants lost. So that's three teams in front of the Cubs that have lost. And this is like the least opportune time for you to not win a game, a winnable game. So it was very, very frustrating today.
Yeah, I'm still, with this much time left, I'm not as worried about what happens, you know, how the wins and losses coincide. you know, whether they win or lose, the Cubs really have to be focused on just winning every possible game. They need that stretch of either you win 10 in a row or you have a stretch of 15 games where you're 10 games over 500, you know, and you just can't do that when you throw a loss into every series. I mean, technically you can, but you know, pitching, good pitching is always going to dominate good hitting. The problem is, like, any pitcher can have a good day, and if any pitcher has a good day, they're probably going to shut down the Cubs. That's basically where we're at.
I mean, to me, basically, I mean, it could happen. I mean, two or three is fine as far as I'm concerned. It'd be great if they could finish it, but man, they got a lot of shitty teams on the schedule coming up. There's like a week where they play the Yankees and Dodgers. I think everyone else is below 500. Well, I guess there's the Phillies, but that's basically the last week of the season, so they probably won't give a shit. So, you know, win some of these winnable games. If they miss the playoffs, I'm not going to be upset either. So maybe I'm not the best person to...
No, if you've already, like, considered, a lot of the people who are in the comments have already checked out since, like, June. So the fact that they're back at 500 for even for a brief bit is sort of a miracle. And I feel like there should be some commendation for that. You're not going to get, like, you know, much more than a participation trophy or a ribbon for that. But it's still kind of impressive that they clawed their way all the way back. At the same time, like, you know, you mentioned the schedule coming up. I heard that based on the way it's lined up, the Cubs are going to the Pirates next day. They have to face Skeens, Jones, and Keller all series. And that's going to be rough, especially for this offense that, you know, sometimes they'll lay a 10 spot on you, and sometimes they just won't score at all until the ninth inning. And by that time, it's too late. And then just today, or maybe the yesterday, I don't even know, but I saw a clip of DJ Hurst, who I believe was traded to the Mets, but for Jamer Candelario. He is striking out everybody, like just doing what you thought DJ Hurst could do. And now I think he is lined up to face the Cubs when they get into DC. So there's bad teams, but they have very good pitching to help them out. And it's kind of like one of those concerns. You can't take the schedule for granted. And I think in a way they kind of took the schedule for granted in this case. It's just they had a chance to sweep the Blue Jays, didn't happen. Same with the Tigers. Tyone laid an egg. And then with the Marlins, it's like this guy has like a 9 ERA, and by the time he's done, it's down to 5. So it's really, really strange how it works out, but it's just a lot of really missed opportunities, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is an opportunity when you're playing the Marlins, but it's just that same old thing. Yeah, sometimes you're going to be facing the best pitcher. Sometimes you're going to be facing the worst pitcher on his best day. And if you're the Dodgers, you're probably still going to score 4 or 5 runs. If you're the Cubs, that's probably not going to happen. And they, you know, they still seem to bring that same runners in scoring position capability to the table where, I mean, they're getting leadoff doubles. They're getting leadoff singles followed by doubles. And they're just not. They're not converting that in a high percentage of the time. Even yesterday, when they had that great offensive output, there were still plenty of times early on where they failed to convert. So they just don't seem to have that in their DNA to be able to capitalize on opportunities at a league average level. And, you know, it could just be dumb luck and variance. Who knows? Obviously, you know, I certainly hope that that's the case, but they're not good enough. Seeing the strides forward that PCA and Amaya have made. Definitely fun to watch and happy to see. But those are the type of things that it's like, okay, that gives me hope for next year. It doesn't really give me hope for this year. Even though, you know, like, well, like you brought up, Jeff, the whole idea of the Phillies kind of being maybe on the relaxation tour by the time they face the Cubs. There are five teams near the top who have a shot at getting one of those two opening round buys. So it as much as the Phillies have distinguished themselves, they're still not in a place where they can just coast past the wild card round. Nobody is. Nobody is.
Yeah, that's a very interesting year. I don't think any team is projected to win 100 games, so you don't have anybody running away with the league, not even the American League, where everything's just kind of packed in, you know? So it's a lot of parity this year, don't you guys think? You expect, well, Milwaukee's obviously running away with the division, but then you have the four other teams in the division that are just beating up on each other, and vice versa, they're getting beat up on because they're teams with flaws, and Milwaukee just simply seems to be the least flawed of them all.
Yeah, and they're running away with it, but not like secretariat, you know, like they have
the 2016 Cubs.
Yeah. If they go on a skid, you know, like they could lose 10 in a row. The Cubs could win 10 in a row. The Cardinals could win 10 in a row, and the Brewers could lose 10 in a row. They don't play each other, but like stranger things have happened. They lost Yelich. There've been as has been widely publicized, there've been a lot of key injuries in different team starting rotations. So there have been a lot of mitigating circumstances that have kept, you know, like the 2016 Cubs were notoriously healthy. That you kind of need something like that to happen for a team to win those 100, 105 games or whatever. And I think the injuries have hurt a lot of the top teams. So I think that's what's kept the top tier from going crazy high. But yeah, it does bring the median up quite a bit because it's not the bottom feeders that are getting those wins from the top teams. It's the second and third tier teams that are getting those wins. And yeah, 90 wins might be enough to win the division. But going 500 is not going to get you into the wild card this year.
Well, I'd at least call that a good thing compared to the past years. I don't know. I feel kind of bad for the Brewers just because, in my head now, well, it's for different reasons, but, they kind of reminded me of the Dallas Cowboys, where I kind of expect them now to have a good regular season and then, like, lose immediately in the playoffs, which is kind of a bummer because, I mean, they are a fan base that's never won a World Series. And I don't have the same Brewers hate that some other Cubs fans do. I'm like, great, they're winning the division. I don't think they're going to do anything. I'd be happy to be wrong, but
if you're being especially petty, I think the Dodgers haven't exactly been playing super well, even though they're still leading the division by, you know, a fairly comfortable margin. Diamondbacks haven't done their swoon. They're basically doing what they did last year when they basically stormed up the standings, except they're doing it pretty much throughout the past couple of months now. So it's going to be crazy for them, especially since I think just about everybody in that rotation is broken. They do have Glasnow and Kershaw. But other than that, it's like if you look at the 40-man roster, there's a lot of like 15 and 60-day IL guys. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, they are at least what is it, like three games up on the Diamondbacks. So that gives them a little cushion. But of all the teams that were projected to be like super crazy awesome, you know, they can't miss, they should contend for World Series teams, that team might be the one that gets bounced in the first round.
Yeah, and there's just that same idea of when you have multiple teams ahead of you in the standings, the games behind that you are feel like even more. I think it's that same thing when you're leading. But yeah, the Dodgers have a semi-comfortable lead of 3 games, but then they're only 4.5 up on the Padres. So I think that gap feels a little bit less because they have multiple teams on their heels at a reasonable distance. So the Dodgers can't afford to go on a losing streak. You know, they're probably not going to go on too many losing streaks because they just score too much. But you run into the wrong pitching staff, and you could see either the Diamondbacks or the Padres catching up to them if, you know, they don't play their cards right.
I was going to say that I just had a vision in my head of Shohei Ohtani making a triumphant return to pitching to save the Dodgers rotation in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Well, he pitched off the mound. Was it today or yesterday?
It was yesterday. He threw a bullpen, so the arm works, and you've seen him playing catch. So, like, he can obviously throw, and that supervised throwing. So he's not, I don't think he's airing it out or anything, but it's a good sign that, you know, he's generally healthy, and he's also hitting the piss out of the ball and stealing bases. Just became another 40-40 guy, and he did it the fastest. I guess it's doubly impressive, right? It's impressive in that he hit all these home runs in a sort of like dead end ball era, and he also stole bases when the bases were like pizza box size. So I don't know if that matters, but being a 40-40 guy actually is a pretty cool thing.
Doing it while you're recuperating from the surgery that made it so you can't pitch, like recovering from Tommy John surgery and having a 40-40 season before September hits,
yeah,
is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, dude is great. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
Yeah, he's basically the ultimate version of a DH that you want, because, you know, usually you kind of lament the DH because they don't play on defense and their only value is the bat. Well, that bat is just super valuable, and you kind of wish he had stumbled into Chicago as a Cub and not as an opponent. I think the Cubs actually visit LA for a set of 3 in September. So that's going to be a rough series, I think, especially since they're vying for a first round bye. I think they're 2 games up on the Phillies right now. So if the Phillies are vying for a first round bye and so are the Dodgers, it's going to be a semi-rough September, especially since they have to face the Yankees too. I think the Yankees, they have the best record in the American League, but they're a game behind the Dodgers. So being all that close, like Adam said, means that nobody is really letting their foot off the gas. Like, these are going to be games that are going to be challenging, and the fact that our playoff odds as Cubs fans rooting for this Cubs team is only like 2.whatever%. It's not impossible.
For real, the Yankees have the best record of the AL.
Based on what I am seeing, they're 77-54 on Fangraphs. I need to check the standings, but yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Screw Yankees fans, man.
And today, actually, Soto, Judge, and Stanton hit back-to-back-to-back home runs. The Soto and Stanton home runs were pretty good. The Judge home run was like, I will hit it opposite field, and it will clear that right porch. And I know that makes a lot of people mad, but it still counts. So, yeah, it was a... I was just thinking to myself, man, that would be nice if the Cubs could do that every now and then. I think that's the thing that we got to look at going forward, too, is just how do you make this offense more consistent? How do you kind of use that mentality where, okay, I don't care where I am in the lineup, I just need to get on base. I know I got to drive in this run, but if I just stay within myself, I will get on base. I don't think that really works, though, because they're only human. They want to press. They want to impress. They want to, like, do well for their team and pick up their teammates. And sometimes that means just, like, behaviors that aren't optimal. But, I don't think it's for lack of trying. I just think that the execution needs a little help.
No, the worst thing you can do is try harder to get a hit.
Right.
You've got
to do the kudu thing. Like, don't try, but you have to try some a little bit.
yeah. Like,
You're doing too much. Oh, but you got to try.
If you have a plan, you do it. You know, you trust yourself to do the plan that you have. Like, if you choose the wrong plan and it doesn't work out, fine. But do the plan that you had. When you try and, you know, hit the 8-run homer, or, you know, you just decide that the next pitch is going to be a strike and you're going to be able to hit it, like, that's when people get into trouble. That was never your plan, but it becomes your, you know, emotional dominating factor. And I think a lot of success in those critical situations is being able to focus and execute your plan, even when the game is on the line, you know, like being able to hit, like, you're just in the cage. So we'll see if the Cubs ever get that capacity. But I think that's your ability to do that, I think, always goes up when you're good and when the guys around you are good. You know, when you don't have that sense, like, the guy behind me is not going to get a hit, I think that increases the chances that you're going to try to do too much and go get out, you know, put more pressure on yourself to perform outside of just what your basic execution is. And, you know, that's when, you know, when people say hitting is contagious, partly I think that's because, well, sometimes when a pitcher's doing bad, that makes it easy for everybody to hit. But I also think it comes down to, when you trust the guy behind you, you tend to hit a lot better. That's my narrative, anecdotal theory.
Well, we got a firsthand look at someone for whom taking that too far was kind of ruined his career, and Javi Baez, who swung at every pitch like it was down the middle when he was with the Cubs, and it's only gotten worse with the Tigers from what you can see of his numbers.
Yeah. He's on the injured list as well now. He was supposed to have a locker and against the White Sox, but he just never got that locker. They put it on the IL pretty much immediately upon getting into Chicago. Or they were already in Chicago, this to the south side, because, after that series, they just IL'd him. I think it's probably the precursor to an eventual DFA if he doesn't, like, shape up. But there are just so many years left on that deal that I don't think they'd just cut date like that. I don't know. They did it for Hosmer, so maybe they will.
I thought Hosmer was the Padres who made all that money.
Yeah, so
you're just talking about teams in general.
So the Padres, I think they cut him loose with 2 years left on his contract or something, and then Boston picked him up, and then Boston was like, no, we're good now. And then that he was let go, and that's when he hooked on with the Cubs until they decided they didn't want to deal with him anymore. But the Padres should have been on the hook for all that money, so it was like low risk for the other two teams. It's kind of weird, too, because if you kind of look at the lineup, you know, Ian Happ has an above average WRC plus and OPS plus. Seiya is the same. Michael Busch is the same. And then if Cody Bellinger qualified on Fangraphs, he would have a positive WRC plus. He does have 109 OPS plus on Baseball Reference. So they're above average. They're just not, like, super elite guys. So I think at some point they have to add that super sharp bat, whether it's going to be just Matt Shaw hitting out of the shoes, very unlikely. I don't know that he's going to be that guy. Maybe it's Owen Casey, unless he's traded for somebody who doesn't, right?
So maybe it's Cam Smith, who's hit home runs in 6 consecutive games for the Pelicans.
Yeah, they just wish
Skip was here. I thought he might be able to fill us in.
Yeah, they did promote him to South Bend. So I think Monday is usually like an all minor league off day, so he'll start on Tuesday, and then they got a couple of weeks before their season ends, and then we'll see what happens. I think they'll just say, hey, you are on fire, rest, whatever, and then go from there. I think there needs to be a philosophy shift, because somewhere along the line, like even last quarter, offense broke, and then it just kind of remained broken organizationally. And I think there's something that is needed to fix it, because these guys are obviously talented. We saw that in the past week of games. Like, you know, they didn't sweep the series, but they were scoring runs and they were doing well. And, you know, the pitching is not really a concern. You know, you kind of wish Javier Assad wouldn't just serve up 2 meatballs to start the game, but he ate 7 innings, and that was really impressive. And then, you know, Merriweather crapped the bed, so no comeback victory possible there. But the pieces are there. I think at some point they just have to look at the schedule. I think as they get closer and closer to their elimination number, they'll probably pivot to calling up some guys on the 40-man already and see what they can do and just kind of evaluate for next year. But I don't know when that date is, because the E number is still pretty big, I think.
Personally, like, obviously what the organization does is one thing, but we're following it as fans. You know, I think as fans, we tend to check out when we're pretty sure we're going to look like idiots if we keep talking about them having playoff chances. But I'm still of that mindset that, like, until it gets to a point where it's like, okay, we need 6 teams to lose 15 games in a row and we need to win every single game for the last 2 months, like, still, like, it's giving up hope is kind of senseless, because try and appear smart, but caring about what baseball team wins is not smart. Like, let's just face it. Being a baseball fan is kind of stupid to begin with. It's an emotional choice. It's not bright to, like, base any part of your happiness on the performance of a bunch of guys, you know, hitting a ball. So, like, we've gone into the bad place. All right, we've crossed over into stupid. We've agreed to it. Let's just go for it. Like, come on. Let's hold out whatever hope we can. And I think when you're playing that game, you kind of got to do that too. It's got to get to the point where it's like, all right, this is ridiculous. It's game over. We cannot win. You know, all right, then bring in the third baseman to pitch, or then start giving the prospects some more at bats during games. But when you have a chance to play more baseball, you do your best to play more baseball. And when you have a chance to win, you do your best to win. And it doesn't need to seem like academic to make that make sense. We made the agreement. We're not going to make sense. We're playing baseball. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I think they are putting in the effort. I don't think effort is the problem. The problem is more performance than effort. So I appreciate that they're showing up. I appreciate that they're going through the motions. Like, it looks bad sometimes that it seems like it's a lazy at bat or an unacceptable at bat, but that's just the nature of the beast. Like, it could very well be in another universe that bat runs into that ball and it goes like 450 feet the other way, like it did for, say, a couple of times in that one game in Miami, right? So
it can't happen.
Yeah.
Killed and, one.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Now, it stands to, Like, I have to say that the Cubs will lose pretty much most of the tiebreakers because they couldn't win the season series against most of the teams in front of them. So they essentially have to beat every single team in front of them by one game. They can't tie them. They have to beat them by one, at least one game. So that's the added challenge. It's not impossible right now, okay, because they haven't been eliminated. So it's like, you know, even in 2009 when, like, they were getting older and they were underperforming. And, like, at some point, the Cubs were actually in first place late in the season before they lost the division by, like, 8 games to the Cardinals. Like, you just kept saying, hey, if they just keep going, if they can get in the wild card, like, that was a team that you wanted to root for. This is similar. Like, this is a team that conceptually should have been better than the one last year. And I think they are on pace to at least finish a little better than last year, which is not, like, the way the season played out was not the way you wanted to see it play out, but, like, ultimately the projections are probably right. They will finish with, like, 83 to 85 wins, right? You had put a post in there in the forum about that, Adam, about how, you know, essentially we have this chance, this opportunity, and, like, it's just a matter of just playing the games and trying to win, and at the very least make the teams in front of you sweat a little. You know, the Cubs aren't pushovers. They may be playing poorly, but there's talent on this team, and hopefully at some point it comes together, and hopefully that some point is before the end of the season. If not, then I really, really hope they address some of these shortcomings in the offseason, because this is the kind of thing that I think gets a few people fired if it persists.
Not here. Everybody's happy. The hitting coach will get fired, you know, that kind of thing. But
the hitting coach helped PCA and Amaya do things.
Yeah. So I don't even know. I don't know that anybody's gonna really pay for this. I just think they're gonna stay with this, like, Kevin Millar attitude of don't let us win tonight, and, you know, run it through, and they're just gonna say, like, okay, we'll figure something out moving forward. But I don't think the Ricketts are, like, demanding better results. You know, I think they're generally positive. I think they're happy with Jed keeping the dream alive and keeping expenses relatively down. Although they did go over the luxury tax, but, you know.
Yeah, what did you guys think of that, though? Like, I was, like, at the beginning of the year, they were so close. Like, Potts was saying that they were probably, like, maybe a million or two under. And then at some point they did the trades, right? And they traded for Isak Paredes, which is a couple million more than Morel would have made. So they actually added payroll, and they're still on the hook for Neris, who is now with the Astros. So he's a DFA. Bodie is still around, so nobody took that salary off of them. So, you know, they're not getting any relief. They're still above. And knowing that they were above, they still added Paredes. So I feel like they don't care, which is kind of strange in a way. But maybe that's encouraging, because we as fans always want them to say, screw the tax, just get good players. And in the offseason, we were all very happy because they did secure good players. What was it, enough good players, or was it the right good players? I don't know anymore, you know, but on paper, it was a good team, and we felt pretty good about ourselves. So I don't know. It's it seems weird in that if you're going to blow past the tax, you want to give yourself a chance to get back down, and they probably could, especially if Cody Bellinger decides to opt out, which I'm still not sure he does. But, there's a lot of, like, math flying around, but I feel like they're going to there's a 50-50 chance that they don't care and they'll just go past it again and incur that additional penalty. Like, it's in a way, it's really stupid. In another way, it's encouraging that they actually might not care.
Well, two things. One, I want to chime in that Neris was the winning pitcher for the Astros today, an inning in the third of no hit, no base runner baseball. So, way to go, Hector.
Yeah.
And then also meeting that threshold of, okay, we went over the luxury tax really affects you only to the extent that you pay beyond it. You know, like, it's when you go over, like, every dollar that you spend after the threshold, you're getting that additional tax hit, you know? Sure. So that's the level where it's going to hurt you. And in an off season where people are starting to ask the question, are the Cubs going to try and get Soto? I think the answer is no, because whatever they pay him, they're well, basically, if they're at that level, unless they figure out a way to free up a ton of space, they're paying him whatever his contract is plus that extra tax.
Well, that's not at the point. It's just the extra money now. I think because there's multiple levels to it, because if it gets to a higher level, that's when you start losing like draft picks and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen with Bellinger. It's kind of a weird situation. I mean, it's been kind of nice that PCA has emerged the way that he has this year, especially lately. But it kind of leaves Bellinger kind of in an awkward position since they've got young guys at center and first and Saya, who's also good around. Kind of doesn't have at least we have the DH of the NL now, but maybe he'll want to go somewhere else where he can make more money by not DHing.
That's true. And the Cubs are in an enviable position where if Bellinger leaves, like, they can try to trade from their depth for a big bat. They can hopefully promote one of their guys to become that breakout big bat. That's kind of one of those things where you say it would be nice, but we can't guarantee it because we don't know what these guys are going to become. But the thing that we can definitely see as they're tearing up the minors is that they're extremely talented and they're hitting really well. Like Owen Casey is just slapping home runs here and there. So is apparently Cam Smith, Matt Shaw. So he played third base one night and then shortstop tonight. And he actually hurt himself making a spectacular play, which is so Cub, right? But yeah, it was a good play. I think he just strained his back and he's out for a couple of days. So it's not like he broke something like, unfortunately, our former friend Wilson Contreras did. So that's one of the good news things. Like, at least one of the teams in front of the Cubs is going to suffer offensively at the expense of our friend, you know, who hurt himself. But yeah, it's really nice to see the talent being cultivated in the minors. We want to see it translate to the majors, and I guess that has me looking really forward to spring 2025, see how they do. And also, like, whether that trip to Japan is going to really mess them up, because you got to kind of ramp up, then ramp back down, and then ramp back up again. And that's the same thing that you're kind of concerned with. Like, are they going to do that with Cade Horton? Are they going to try to ramp him up before the end of the season? Or are they just going to let him rest? And I think the smart money is they're just going to let him rest and be fully ready by spring. And hopefully he's healthy enough to actually replace probably Kyle Hendricks at this point. And who knows what else. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of very tough decisions this offseason, I think, because there are impending free agents. There are guys that they'll need to protect on the 40-man from the minors. And then there are trades that are gonna need to happen. And I guess good news is a lot of the guys that are going to be non-tendered and disappear off the books are guys that you don't really care as much about anyway.
I was just trying to look up how much more team control the Cubs have over Paredes. I think it's one more year.
I thought it was two, but I might be completely wrong. I think they might have more. But regardless, he's here beyond this year, and that was still like a pretty good trade. Like, he had been hitting really well. If he has that potential, he just kind of lost right now.
But yeah, he's really I was surprised by how much he stunk up the joint since coming here.
Yeah, at least he's making some defensive plays, and he had a double the other night. That was nice. He was supposed to get an entire day off, and then Patrick Wisdom got like the worst ejection ever. Like, I don't know what happened.
He slammed his helmet down on a called strike three, and whatever your intentions are, you have an umpire who just got overturned by his crew on a call a few pitches before, and I think he was just on a little bit of a short fuse and just wasn't having it. So
okay.
It stunk, but I also think it's like the ejection trigger can happen so fast, you know, and when you call a strike three, whether it's frustration or not, the rules are pretty clear. I believe that throwing equipment is verboten. So that like if that happens, I don't think the umpire should eject you automatically, but you can't be shocked by it when you throw equipment and you get tossed, especially when it's on a called strike three. Like, I don't think there was any intent there, but the one call that never gets overturned is an ejection.
Yep.
So it happens. And it's like, it's Patrick Wisdom. Like, so what?
Yeah, the only so what is just Isak Paredes was supposed to get the whole day off, and now he has to play the last six innings or five innings, right? So that was the only thing that I was kind of bummed about, because at that point it was like, okay, you're down two runs or three runs. Can you please kindly score those runs to equalize it so that you have a chance to go ahead in the late innings? And that never happened. So that's a whole other level of frustration, but I thought that was silly.
Especially that it happens the day after you DFA Bodie.
Yeah.
that's who you would typically expect if you wanted to preserve, the day off for Paredes. So, it was unfortunate, but it's one of those things. Yeah. Stop taking called third strikes. That's what's driving me nuts right now. I know it's hard. I know it's really difficult to do what they're doing. But as a fan, I don't know if there's... this is just like a side quest argument. What is more frustrating? A hitter who swings at a slider that goes into the dugout, or a hitter who takes a third strike down the middle?
I would almost prefer they strike out swinging, honestly. Like, sometimes it's just a really good pitch. There's nothing you can do about it. Like, I struck out a couple of times today, both looking, because I was like, I can't tell where the ball is going. It looks high, and then it dips into the zone, and it's just like, wow, you know? And these guys are only throwing like 60, 70. Like, you're looking at 90 plus to an 80 mile an hour, like, you know, sweeper or whatever else that they throw with lots crazier movement. You can almost forgive them, but I would almost rather they go down swinging, to be honest.
I'd rather they go down looking, just because it provides me more grist for complaining about umpires.
Fair enough.
Yeah. If you guys had heard about those rules, like, this is funny, because I think David hadn't talked to us in weeks, and he came in and said, I freaking hate this and stuff like that. But basically, it's the 6-inning minimum rule that has been kind of floating around. And I sort of kind of understand it, but I think it's more of a 100-pitch minimum now. And that also has its own set of problems. And I didn't share it with you guys, but the former pitcher, Trevor May, had a really good video about it and talking about how, like, and even Justin Verlander tonight on ESPN when he was doing the dugout interview with Boog and whoever else was commentating, is saying, yeah, there's velocity and movement. We're never getting away from that. But yes, it would be kind of nice to give the starting pitcher more emphasis. So how do you kind of do that? I don't think mandating a limit really helps. I think one thing that could work is that double hook rule that I think Jason Stark has suggested, where you tie the DH to the starting pitcher as long as he finishes six innings.
Yeah, so I don't think that would be enough, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really like any solutions. Like, there's also one that I know, like Ben Lindbergh from Effectively Wild has always been pushing on the, let's just severely limit the number of pitchers you could have on a roster. And I'm like, that's just the recipe for, you know, dudes getting injured or extra inning games. Like, even with the new rules, you'd still be pretty screwed if you had like two extra inning games in a week.
I've got the idea.
Yeah.
I've got it. But it's tied to computerized robotic strike zone. The idea I have is that if you have a strike zone that the home plate umpire can see, like wearing goggles, you can see the strike zone. You can see
like where augmented the ball reality.
Just so you see that. You have it all controlled. You can see where it crosses the plate, exactly where it is. And you can still have that human element of, okay, yeah, I called it a strike, but it's tailing away. It was never really in the strike zone except for this 1 millisecond. I'm not calling that a strike. Whatever, dude, fine. You make the call, but you can see it. If you have that, you then have the ability to adjust the strike zone. Add an inch, add 2 inches, add 3 inches, whatever it is. And every time a pitcher goes through the order, the strike zone goes to the next level where it expands by an inch around the edge or a half inch or, you know, whatever it is, whatever makes a meaningful, like maybe the first time through it's nothing. Maybe it's not until after two times through that you gain that advantage, but the pitcher gains a decided advantage each time through the lineup, the strike zone expands slightly. And everybody can learn it. Everybody, every pitch would be confirmed. Everything would be very, you know, easy to administer. But every time through the lineup, a starting pitcher strike zone would expand slightly for the next one. And maybe the jump from second to third is bigger. Maybe the jump from third to fourth is even bigger than that. But if the pitcher has a bigger strike zone the next time through the order, maybe if you test it out, maybe you find that the third time through advantage or the third time through curse or whatever it is gets negated if the pitcher has a little bit more wiggle room on a strike zone.
Hmm.
That's my proposal.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
It sounds great in theory. I just think you're going to get a pushback from the people who are like, the strike zone is already amoeboid and amorphous, right? And so now right. I got to figure this
That's
out.
That's the beauty.
But
we've been conditioned already for pitches that were beyond the strike zone to be called. Now there would be order to it instead of chaos.
Yeah. I like the idea you suggested, though, because in a way, like analytics is well aware of that third time through penalty. You're now trying to find a way to mitigate that penalty so that the starting pitcher gets to stay in longer. That's kind of separate from the whole pitch count thing, because in order to get to the third time through, he has to throw a certain number of pitches. So it would reward certain pitchers who are better at managing that zone and throwing like a more efficient amount of pitches. So in that sense, I get it.
Here's a business side too that I'll inject here as well. If the league had a bonus system for pitchers, like if you had incentives built into your contract that for a a certain number of innings pitched or a certain number of wins or quality starts or whatever it is that you get those bonuses, if the league as a whole paid those instead of each individual team. So you wouldn't have these small market teams with the incentive. Yeah. Where they're just not paying starters because it's cheaper to do the opener and company. If it's a league-wide collectively bargained contract incentive, then you don't have managers who are basically doing the owner's bidding by cutting their starters short and managing the roster in that way. Just one other.
Yeah. I was going to say that your idea with the augmented reality might be, I don't know if the umpire has to know it real time. Are you only giving the umpire the VR goggles, or does the batter get it too?
Just the umpire. Although that would be hilarious if someone
I can track it's kind of like when you're playing the show or you know, one of the EA games, and you already see the box and where the pitch crossed the zone as it goes through.
But, based on the trajectory and the spin, I know the ball is going to get here, and I give it an alert of where the location is going to be. That's even faster than, you know, the speed of the pitch.
Yeah, and then I just got to push up on the right thumbstick to get my power swing going. But anyway, you know how there's the FCC 7-second delay, and then there's also a delay between when the broadcast is done and when they are able to show the real time. It's not real time. It's actually on a several second delay, because I think they have to get data from the league. And then there, so the umpire during that 15 seconds on the pitch clock has to process all that information and keep track of the guy, because there is inevitably going to be a delay. Now, the fact that on the ABS challenge system, like, you know, you tap your helmets, they do it right away. It's done in 15 seconds. I think that works fine for them. So I don't know how the timing is going to work, but that I was just thinking about, like, the logistics of that, because there is going to be a delay for them to track the pitch where it was in the zone and then render it for that heads up display.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah. And even if the ball data isn't on there, even if you just have like the strikes, if the goggles, all it does is show you the strike zone for that particular player, you know, with all their data. So because the high low part of the strike zone, it's still really confusing and nebulous to me as far as how it actually gets legislated. And I think that needs to be cleaned up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And even what you see, like what they have in the system now, like you can see the strike zone change as each hitter comes up. There's some guys where it looks like it's going up, and I'm sure some of it is where they stand in the box, but you know, it'll have where it looks like it's right under the guy's belt, and then Cody Bellinger comes up there and it looks like it's in his Adam's apple. It's just I can see, even if you just had data for that hitter, where it gives you a definitive, here's the top and bottom of the zone, here's left to right, even if it doesn't show you, yes, you know, give an indication of where the ball is, if it's in the zone, at least if you have that frame of reference in your vision, it makes making that call that, you know, that much easier.
I think you're just going to have to try to train and maintain arms a little more carefully, and you know, you're doing the same thing in a semi-unnatural motion 100 times a game. Eventually you're going to get hurt, so it's like it's an inevitability. But whichever team can figure it out, I think they'll be at a extreme advantage over the rest of them. And I can't really think of a team that has kind of navigated the season unscathed pitching wise, including the Cubs so far. So it's I think the the thing that the players want is player safety, which is counterintuitive, right? Because you're like, I'm still going to throw really, really hard, and I'm going to have all kinds of movement to put torque on my elbow and forearm and shoulder, but I still want you to protect me. And to me, a non-professional baseball player who has never pitched, I don't pitch. I don't have like the acumen or the arm or anything for it. It doesn't make sense to me to say it that way. But I understand their incentive, right? Like, if I can pitch faster, if I can make a move, I am more likely to be successful. And I understand the trade-off that, you know, I will break my arm at some point. And they accept that risk. So, yeah, it's a strange one, man.
Yeah, and I think it's too, like, they've kind of been conditioned. They've come up through every level of baseball where your pitch count is monitored and arm health is stressed in that way, like where you've played that balance of here's how you maximize your performance, but also these are the rules in place to protect pitcher arms. And there probably aren't as many high school coaches willing to let their guys or being given the freedom to let their guys throw 200 pitches in a game and that type of thing. So it's also a different culture that these pitchers have grown up in compared to what Nolan Ryan faced growing up.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like you're throwing every pitch this summer. Like, yeah. Okay, fine, coach.
Yeah, there are coaches like that, like including in the Little League World Series. You guys heard about that, right? There was a kid who like was talking about discomfort, and the coach was like, no, just give us one more batter. And then he gave up a bunch of hits, and his arm and elbow apparently were really injured. So I think for kids without a certain level of agency, somebody has to really take care of them and like just change the mentality a little bit. And that's why anything that changes this particular role is going to take years to implement.
Yeah. Years or some type of breakthrough in terms of treatment and or mechanics teaching.
Or just let them all take HGH. Like everybody's on the same level. Same playing field at that point, and they can feel a little better, right? That's what HGH does, right?
Well, it's funny because I know Malcolm Gladwell had one episode of his show where he talked about comparing Tommy John surgery to steroids or HGH, and like which is actually a bigger ethical leap to take, allowing you know someone to take a supplement that helps their body heal, or allowing surgeons to, you know, do medical damage to your tendons in order to make it possible for you to recover and heal again. Without going into the whole mess, it is an interesting question where we do allow pitchers to basically keep doing this. You might have to have surgery, but it's not that big a deal. It's become commonplace. Go ahead. We'll tear your arm apart and reconstruct it surgically. But taking a naturally occurring hormone and, you know, upping the dosage a little bit to help your body heal, you know, that's awful. But
Or even other stuff. I mean, you see this more in the NFL, but happens in baseball too. Like the quarter of the shot, the stuff people get for knees and stuff like that.
That they just trying to dull the pain and make sure they can play through it. Yeah. Well, I think you opened up a line of questioning and discussion that I think we can explore in the off season. But before the off season, we got to finish this season. So we're talking 31 games left. Basically, they need 85 wins, so that's 20 wins at least, probably more to get into the playoffs. So let's see how they do, guys. Thanks again for hanging out with me. Just trying to get this done for Labor Day, and we'll try to meet again at the next off day that we see. I hope you guys enjoy your Labor Day weekend, but we want to thank everybody, like the three of you who are actually listening to this. you can find us at obstructiveview.net. Our theme music is by Rishtiana, and you can hear the final outcall 2016 World Series, which the Cubs won. That Hughes, that was pulled by our friend Randall Sanders. That's it, guys.
It was more than just a game.